Parshas Chayisara. Now, what we are going to do is we are going to continue developing some of the themes that we have been speaking about in the previous weeks, specifically the theme of the elimination of the ani, the I. We've concentrated Parshas Vayera on Avraham, and now it's time to concentrate on all of the women that we will find in Bereishis, and even beyond the Chumash of Bereishis, we will look into Esther and Ruth, and we will begin to understand their participation in this process of eliminating the Ani. First, let's review for a moment what we said about Avraham. We said that when Avraham was able to fulfill the ultimate mitzvah of Yiras Elokim, fear of Elokim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu blessed him, gave him a bracha. He had given him brachas before, but he gave him the strongest of the brachas. And we explained that the definition of being a Yorei Elokim, in other words, of fulfilling the mitzvah of Es Hashem Elokecha Tira, fearing your God, from Devarim Perek Yud, is not refusing to do a mitzvah, not withholding, or refusing to do an avera lo chasachta, you did not withhold. And we explained that by refusing to avoid the mitzvah, in other words, what looks to us superficially as doing the mitzvah, but what looks to a Kadosh Baruch Hu as refusing to avoid the mitzvah, and that's why the Malach did not make a mention of anything Avram did in the process of doing the mitzvah. Remember this? What to Hashem is not refusing is really, in Hashem's eyes, the elimination for the person in their mind, in the Olam HaMachshava, of any agenda of the I, of the Ani, that I resist, I don't understand, you made a promise to me that now you're breaking, that I reject, that is a violation of everything I stand for, that I love him, it's a violation of my emotions. There's no more Ani, there's no more I. We explain the psiktama between Avraham and Avraham. Avram perfect up until the Akedah in the Olam Hamas and the world of deeds. Every deed was perfectly in line with Hashem and of the Ratzon Hashem. But what about the Machshava? For the greatest of the great, the Machshava also must be in line with the will of Hashem, and the deed is just the reflection of a previous choice made in the Olam HaMachshava. And after the Akedah, the Avraham, the Ani, who Avraham was, is synonymous in a sense with Ani Hashem, what Hashem was. So we spoke about that. And we understand that after the Akedah, Avraham was a completely different person, and the Perek ends with Vayeshev, Avraham Be'er Sheva, Avraham returned. And prior to that, Vayashev, Avraham El Narav, Avraham returned to his lads, and Avraham dwelled in Be'er Sheva. But we never hear about Yitzchak. Where was Yitzchak? He doesn't tell us that he ever returned from the Akedah, and we will come back to this point later on when we discuss Rivka and her importance and begin to understand what happened to Yitzchak. But before we get to Rivka, we have to move backwards and spend some time on understanding Sarah. And in order to understand Sarah, we have to go way back in understanding Chava, because understanding Chava and the sin of Chava begins to help us see that what the women, alongside the men, but more than the men, it really was the women who had the job of doing tikkun on Chava's sin. And therefore, we have to understand the sin of Chava, because that is the origin, that is where the concept of ani, I as an subjective person with my own views, enters into the whole picture. The Ani begins with Chava. In Perek Aleph, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in Perek Aleph of Bereishis, where there's a creation of Ish and Isha, or rather Zohar and Nekeva, they're called Adam, they are a single entity, and Hashem gives them a bracha, V'yavarech Osam. Perek Hei tells us, V'yikres Shemam Adam, their name was Adam. They were Tzelem Elokim. We've discussed this in the past, perfect, many gods on this world. And in Perek Aleph, there is no concept of the human being, the Tzelem Elokim, the perfect ruler, the one who dominates this very world, who's told that you are the ruler of this world. And in Perek Aleph of Bereishis, remember, Hashem tells them, you can eat everything. Nothing is prohibited. You can. Everything is here for you, for your benefit. And the pasuk is in pasuk Perek Aleph pasuk Chavtes VaYomer Elokim Hine Nasati Lachem Eskol Esev Zorea Zera Asher Al Pnei Kol Haaretz VeEskol HaEitz, everything that grows in every tree. Okay, you can have everything Lachem Yehiyeh LaAchla. There are no prohibitions. There are no limitations. This is perfect human being. This is Tzelem Elokim, and the Perek is written B'Shem Elokim. We've always explained that Elohim is synonymous with MS, pure truth and pure justice. Now, there was no Ani in Perek Aleph. There was no Ani at all. However, in Perek Beis, where we are told once more about the creation of man, we are given a different perspective on that creation, and Pasuk Vav tells us, Ve'yitzer Hashem Elohim es ha'adam, ofer min ha'adama, dirt of the earth, with an neshama. And here begins the conflict. I'm half neshama and I'm half dirt. So my dirt tells me that I have interest and my neshama tells me that God has interest. And now I have to make harmony between the two. Okay? The name of Hashem used in Perek Beis is always Hashem Elokim. And we've explained that this very important point many times, that once you have man who is part animal, there needs to be Rachmanis because the inevitability of sin is very great. The Nachash comes to Chava and he was very intelligent. And this is, he asks her one question, and this is the beginning of her downfall. He says to her, and he wasn't, and he never said a thing that was a lie, but he tricked her. He says to her, "V'yomer el ha'isha, af ki amar Elokim lo tochlu mikol eitz hagan." Didn't Elokim tell you? Did Elokim tell you not to eat from all the trees in the garden? And she answered, "Mipri Eitz Hagan Nochel." No, we can eat from the Eitz Hagan. No, we can eat from all the trees. But Umipri HaEitz Asher B'Toch Hagan Amar Elokim Lo Tochlu Mimenu. But from the tree in the middle of the garden, Elokim said, "Don't eat from it." What happened here? What happens here? Did Elokim ever tell them not to eat from the tree?
No.
Elokim never said, "Don't eat from the tree." Elokim created human beings that were perfect, that were godlike, that had no isurim and no prohibitions, and there was no fear of them eating from a tree that would give them a vision of tov v'ra, which is normally subjective, as we've spoken about, as opposed to emes and sheker, which is objective. There was no danger of Perek Aleph Adam eating from the Eitz Hadas, because even if it would have a perspective of good versus bad, it would be in line with God's perspective of what is good and what is bad. And that's what the Nachash says. If you eat from it, you will be like Elokim, Yodea Tov V'ra. And there's nothing wrong with that in Perek Aleph, as God knows good and bad, and God knows true and false. So will these creatures, these human beings, know true and false, and also have an opinion of good and bad, and it will be exactly the same opinion as Hashem. However, in Perek Beis, where they are Afar Min Hadama, where they have other impulses pulling on them, they in Perek Beis cannot eat from the Eitz Hadas. That is where the command arises, do not eat from the Eitz Hadas. In Perek Beis, Hashem Elokim. Because human beings with their own needs and their own physical impulses, which are very different than Hashem's, now with subjective knowledge of good or bad, are in huge danger of competing or disagreeing with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because Hashem, you have your MS and Sheker, but to me your MS seems Ra. And your Sheker, what you say Sheker, seems very good to me. So now in Perek Beis, which is less perfect, less godly of a creation, there is a great danger of eating from the Eitz Hadas. So the Nachash says, "Did Elokim tell you not to eat from the Eitz Hadas?" And she says, "No, actually, we can eat from everything." But then she adds, "But Elokim said, don't eat from the Eitz Hadas." Now that wasn't true. Hashem Elokim told them not to eat from the Eitz Hadas. Now these two things, these two stories of creation are simultaneous. They're not one, chronologically one after the other. They're two parallel tracks that man can exist on. Perek Aleph, Perek Beis. Perek Beis is the reality, but the ultimate destination is Perek Aleph. Is the person whose thoughts are in line with the thoughts of Hashem. Of the machshava of a person is in line with the machshava of Hashem, the will of the person. The Nachash says to her, basically what the Nachash said to her was, there is an option, there is a possibility that you can live and the Perek Aleph reality. Why do you accept your limitations as Afar Min Hadama, who's limited and prohibited from having opinions? Do you realize you're God? You're like God Himself. Your opinions can be as true and as correct as God's. You can be like Hashem. You can jump right back and be Perek Aleph. Elohim didn't tell you not to eat from Eitz HaDaat. But you don't have to accept the limitations of Afar Min Hadama, that you're dirt of the earth, and therefore you're subjective, and therefore you're in danger of making a mistake, and therefore you have prohibitions that hold you away from certain things that could lead you to danger, that could ruin you. Don't accept your limitations. In other words, aspire to be how Hashem made you, Perek Aleph. And there are people that walk this earth that sin, and their sins are the most grievous of sins because they come from Perek Aleph. They're competing with God Himself for total control of all people, to be the total decider of life and death for all people, to make all the decisions. There are people that are competing with Hashem that do reject the limitations that are imposed on them as expressed in Perek Beis of a human being who has own subjective qualities and therefore is in danger of making mistakes and therefore must be limited. They see that they can be perfect. There are many people that sin because of Perek Beis, because I'm human and I'm Afar Min Hadama, so there's a beautiful woman or there's something else I want or I can't stop myself from, it's so easy to keep this money, no one will know. These are Perek Beis sins because I'm Afar Min Hadama. They are not the sins that destroy the world. They're grievous in the eyes of Hashem, but they are not the sins that destroy this world. The sins that can destroy the world are the sins of the Hitlers of this world who are competing with Hashem, who refuse to accept that they're limited, that they're not Tzelem Elohim, that they are prohibited because their own perspective might be skewed. They refuse to accept that their own perspective might be skewed. And they think their perspective is like God's perspective, and they can do what they want to do. When Hashem comes to blame her for eating for the sin, these are the words she says, and the Ravid in the Sefer HaYetzirah explains the inner secret of her defense. When Hashem comes to her in Perek Gimel, Pasuk Yud Gimel, He says to her, why did you eat, right? Gimel, Yud Gimel. Vayomer Hashem Elokim, Leisha, Mazos Asis. What did you do? Vatomer Isha, Hanachash, Hishiani, Vaochel. The Nachash, what? How do we translate Hishiani? He deceived me. Ravid explains, Hishiani, Yesh Ani. Yesh Ani. The Nachash seduced her by saying, you, the Ani, is like the Ani of Hashem. You're not limited. You have your own subjective opinions. You could be like God. You have Ani Hashem, Ani. There is an Ani. And I can think my thoughts like God knows what's right and wrong. I can know what's right and wrong. I don't need to be subject to limitations. I'm not in danger of destroying the world because of my own perspective. There is an Ani, and I trust my Ani. By the way, the hallmark of all extremely successful people, for the good and for the bad, you should know this. Everyone is aware of this probably by just experience. Extremely successful people, for good and for bad, have this quality. They are incapable of seeing things from the other person's perspective. When somebody has a dream, they pursue it at all costs, and they don't hear, which is good and sometimes bad, all the suggestions people have, the dangers, the risks, the possibility of failure, the negative side. They don't hear this. Someone who is very driven to accomplish something hears only their side, or at least they block out every other side, and it's impossible to really argue. That is their koach. It's a great strength. It's also a great danger, but it's certainly an attribute of extremely ambitious, driven people. They are very, very tunnel-minded in their perspective. So she says, he gave me the Ani. This is the beginning of death. Death of the person. Because now that the person thinks there's an I, the tikkun is that all comes to an end. And the only thing that really survives is the neshama, which is not supposed to have an I that's any different than a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Everything that makes me think I, that all goes away. The beginning, the tikkun of Chava's sin is eliminating the Ani. She said, Hishah Nachash Hishiani Yesh Ani. And now it becomes the job of coming back to the Madrega before the Chait, which is eliminating the Ani. The fact that I trust myself to be as correct in my judgment as God himself. To understand that a human being is not necessarily correct in their judgment, that a human being must limit themselves because they're in danger of making huge mistakes and destroying the world because they are sure that they're right. Okay? So the tikkun begins to come in looking at oneself in a mirror and saying, am I in danger of being sure of my own opinions and therefore eliminating the ani? You begin, of course, to see that Avraham was sure that Yishmael should not be sent out, right? It was very wrong in his eyes, and Hashem said, of course, Shema B'Kolah. This is one of the examples of the tikkun of the mothers, the imos, on Chava's sin, where they do not, they have a certain ability to have perspective and not act by what I think, the ani, but eliminate the ani and do what's emes. Okay? Now, you see that Chava did something very strange, and this becomes very important. She ate from the Eitz Hadas, and not only did she eat from the Eitz Hadas, which gave her the sense of ani, I, as soon as she realized that, she knew right away that she had changed all things in the world, she went ahead, Pasuk Zion, this is earlier, before she defends herself to Hashem and says, Hanachash, right? After she ate from the Eitz Hadas, Vatitein gam le'isha ima vayochal. She also gave her husband to eat. Rashi says here, in the Rashi on Pasuk Zion in Perek Gimel, the fact that she gave her husband, Rashi says here, Shelo tamos he, that she shouldn't die, v'yichyahu, and he should live, v'yisa acheres, and marry another person. It seems very funny, but we're going to understand it in a much deeper sense. She did not want him to go on without her. Now Rashi doesn't say go on without her, stop. Go on without her and marry someone else. After she ate, she understood, because Hashem warned them, that there will be death in the world. Once human beings die, it becomes necessary, therefore, to have offspring. Notice her name did not become Chava until after the Chait, because prior to the Chait, having offspring was not that important. They were eternal. Okay? So offspring wasn't a good thing, but it was not to replace oneself. It was to fill up the world so that there would be people serving Hashem in this world and bringing the Shekhinah here, but not to replace oneself. After the sin, it becomes a necessary, it becomes critical that one replace themselves. So she becomes Chava, Eim Kol Chai. But she had another identity prior to that and alongside that called Isha. Okay, Isha is not necessarily tied up with Eim Kol Chai. There's Isha, the human being, the Tzelem Elokim, that's female. And then there's Eim Kol Chai, the mother of life, because she must be in charge of reproducing, replacing humanity as humanity dies out. So it's not that she just didn't want him to live without her. She didn't want him to marry someone else, and humanity would continue through someone else and not through her. That the future would not have a connection to her. She wanted that if there would be a future, it would be through her, and if there would not be through her, there would be no future. This is critical. So we're going to see that the imahos, the mothers, the matriarchs, and the great women leaders in our history, not only, they had three jobs, let's say it this way. They had to eliminate the ani, the yesh ani. They had to do tikkun on the desire to be the connection to the future, me or nothing. And they had to somehow eliminate the death curse that came into the world. And you're going to see that it works on all of these three levels. So first you get to Sarah. We've already spoken about in Perek Tes Zayin, Pasuk Gimel, and there's a string of verbs that is only used like this twice in the Torah, once by Chava, Vatikach Vatitein Leisha, that she took and she gave to her husband, and once by Sarah, Perek Tes Zayin, Pasuk Gimel, and she saw she couldn't have children. Vatikach Sarai Eishas Avram is Hagar Hamitris Shivchasa Miketz Eser Shonim L'Sheves Avram Be'eretz Kanan Vatiten Osal Avram Isha Lo Leisha. The three, those two verbs, Vatikach Vatiten Leisha. She goes and gives Hagar to her husband. Same string of two verbs and the noun. only time the string is used. So we've explained that this is clearly the beginning, Sarah is the beginning of the great Jewish people, the great Jewish women. This is clearly the beginning of the Tikkun, that Chava, Isha, wanted to ensure that her husband not go on without her, and that the future not be, not that there shouldn't be a future that doesn't have something to do with Chava. The Tikkun of Sarah clearly is that there should be a future for Avraham, and if it doesn't have a connection to her, she will accept this sacrifice. If the future is not connected to her in the most basic way, that it's not her child, she will not withhold the future. She will not withhold Avraham's future and the future of the Jewish people because of her own possession, her own possessiveness. So obviously it takes a great degree of sacrifice of the ani, of the I, the yesh ani, to hold back and allow the future to continue without her. And we're going to see this pattern with all of the great people, the great women, that they will sacrifice their own needs and their own natural desire so that the future, specifically the future of the Jewish people, can proceed with or without them. They will sacrifice themselves for the future of the Jewish people. In other words, every one of the women we will explore today is really brings herself on the same, on the Akedah that Avraham brought Yitzchak on. Sacrifices herself. Notice something strange. Every one of the mothers was an Akara. Rav Kantrovitz, my husband's grandfather, great genius, the Rebbe and uncle of Rav Moshe Feinstein, often quoted in the Sefer of the Shilas and Chuvas of Moshe Feinstein, Igros Moshe, explains that the reason they were Akaras is that the Jewish people that they bore were born only from them and not from their ancestors. In other words, we are not the descendants of Sarah's parents, nor of Rivka's parents, and nor of Rachel and Leah's parents. We do not have a connection to Lavan and Besuel and Haran. We don't Haran, right? Haran. We do not have a connection to them because their line was stopped. We are not the grandchildren of Lavan and Besuel and neither will see is Rus, the grandchild of Lot, in a real sense. Okay? Because there, the line, the bloodline, the future, the natural progression of the future from their ancestors came to a complete hold, and they only, their womb, so to speak, were opened up only al pines, and therefore they were like brand new creations, and the children coming from them were only from Sarah and Avraham and not beyond that. Take this a little further. When each woman gave up her control that she should be the beginning of the future, when Sarah gave Hagar to Avraham that it should continue without her, in a sense, she was expressing that the Jewish people begin anew on their own, not because of her, not necessarily because she made the Jewish people, that there should be a Jewish people that arises by itself, so to speak, with their own choice, with its own bechira. She removes herself. Ultimately, the Jewish people, as they develop, each stage along the way develops, in a sense, in a vacuum. It's almost like once the mothers pull out their part of it, sacrifice themselves for the future of the Jewish people, you can't say that the devotion to Hashem comes b'misora only as a tradition handed down, because they pulled out and let it grow on its own. So you see this with Sarah. Vatikach v'titein le'isha, she gives to her husband. Now, there's something I want to focus on here that's just a little bit of a tangent, but it's very interesting. My grandfather points this out, and it's what to think about. We're just going to discuss a nugget, but you can let your thoughts roam on this and connect this to many other ideas you probably have heard. When Avraham and Sarah receive the news that she will have a child, that she will have an offspring, that Klal Yisrael will continue through her, okay, after she's already demonstrated that she's willing for it to continue without her, which is her form in a sense of an akedah, her reaction in Perek Yudches, Pasuk Tes Vav, page 80, right, we know that she laughs. And Hashem says, going back to Pasuk Yud Gimel, Lama zet tzachak asara? Why did she laugh? Saying, will I really give birth after I'm old? Can Hashem not do something? In a year from now, Sarah will have a child. Look at the next pasuk, Tesva, v'techachesh Sarah. Sarah denied it somehow. Lamor saying, lo tzachakti, I didn't laugh. Ki yorea. Now, the simple English translation, she was frightened, but we'll be careful with that. Vayomer, and Hashem says, lo ki tzachakt, you did laugh. Now, there's this emphasis that Hashem has to explain to her that she laughed, you know? A strange pasuk. First and foremost, my grandfather Schwab explains, when she says, lo tzachakti ki yorea, doesn't mean she's saying, oh no, I didn't laugh because she was scared, okay? Like a little child denying what they did. She's saying, laughter, which is a little bit, we're reading it as the disbelief that it could really happen to her, okay? Not that she disbelieved Hashem can do something, but the disbelief that some type of natural reaction that it's such a miracle should take place. She, my grandfather explains that she didn't herself, and you'll see there's a lot of psik tam, there's a lot of lines in this pasuk, dividing things. She herself did not recognize that she laughed, that there was an essence, a tiny drop of suspicion, of disbelief. And why did she not recognize in herself that she had internally some type of a laugh? Ki yorea, because she was like Avram, a yorei Elokim. There was no ani. There was no I. She was a yorei Elokim. She had eliminated this the I. Hashem had already called her, not just Sarai, but Sarah. He trusted her with being the in charge of the Sarah, the princess, the mess, you know, the role model for everybody. So she said, Yorea, I fear God. How there is no ani that would in any way distance myself from Hashem's nevuah. That could it be? In other words, Hashem said, no, you did. Now, my grandfather brings down a very interesting medrash here. It says here that Bereishis Rabba says the following, and you might hear this. Let's discuss this for a moment. It's a bit of a tangent, but it's related and it's interesting. Me'olam lo nizkak HaKadosh Baruch Hu la'siach im ha'isha. We never see Hashem speaking directly to a woman. We know women had nevuah, but Bayomer Hashem, not even through a malach. That's very unusual. We never see Hashem speaking directly to a woman. Ela im osa ha'tzadekis, except with this tzadekis. Va'afhi, we see here, va'afhi al yidei ila va'alila lefisha amra lo tzachakti heshiv la HaKadosh Baruch Hu lo ki tzachakt. And it goes on to say, v'kul etc. v'kamek kirkurim kirkar, how many kind of somersaults did Hashem do? B'shvil ha'siach ima, in order to talk to her, va'yomer lo ki tzachakt, no, you did laugh. And so this seems to be totally yotzei min haklal that Hashem would speak to her and say, you laughed. My grandfather explains here something. It opens up an entire new way of thinking. Women, as we've just said, are in charge ultimately of the tikkun of the Chet Chava of removing the ani. Women are also created that we are both physically the makabel, the receiver, and also women are the mashal for Klal Yisrael ultimately that are makabel, the ruchnius to from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ultimately we're makabel Torah. In order to be a makabel, to receive from someone else everything they have to give, one must put aside their own agenda. That is the essence of Kabbalah Satorah. That is the essence, and it's played out on a regular basis with in a physical relationship between a man and a woman, that a woman is a makabel. She allows someone else to give and doesn't stop them. This is Kabbalah, accepting, receiving. So my grandfather brings down that there was some Caesar that says to Yeshua ben Hananya, he says, I want to see God. Show me God if he exists. So they went outside, and Yeshua Ben Hananya says, okay, look at the sun, straight, in the blazing heat of the day, Middle Eastern sun, look. He says, I can't see the sun, it'll burn out my eyes. So he says, you're right, if you can't see the sun because it'll burn out your eyes, then how could you expect it to see Hashem who created the sun? Take it further. How, if we want to see the sun, and we know it will burn out our eyes because the receptors in our eyes are just not strong enough to receive the intensity of the rays, what do we do to allow us to see the sun? You darken. In other words, you block out a good portion of the strength of the sun, and that allows you then to see the sun. So you're seeing not the whole intensity, but at least something. What the Chazal mean here, that Hashem doesn't talk to women? My grandfather of Schwab explains that because women are makablim, because their neshamas are open, and they are capable of receiving a great intensity of the Shechina, which is a feminine description, right, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shechina Shochein, a Shochein, someone who lives near you, it's close to you, that it is extremely dangerous for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to speak to a tzaddikus, because the receptive ability is so powerful that it could destroy them. They have no barriers. There's no blockage. They are totally makabil. There's no ani, in other words. There's nothing blocking. When Hashem's Shechina comes to them and Hashem's nevuah, it can penetrate so deeply, nothing holds it back. There's no machitza. So it's extremely dangerous for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to speak to a tzaddikus, such as in a normal situation. The only reason that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could speak to Sarah here, and did speak to Sarah, is because she laughed. There's an element that perhaps was imperceptible to herself of distance, of putting what Hashem said and what she thought separate from each other. She, in a sense, put put sunglasses on and made herself less of a makabel. This was the one instance of her life where she had a sense of ani. Can't be. What she imagined, what Hashem said, didn't jive. Therefore, Hashem could speak to her and point out to her, you laugh. An interesting thing to think about, but it underscores what we're saying, is that women are not only are in charge of eliminating the ani, but have an ability to do this. It's almost like all abilities must be cultivated. So just because they're innate doesn't mean they can be truly developed if we ignore them. But once ignored, the women have a unique ability to eliminate the ani. And you see later on, now when we get to Chayasara, that this is the chapter of her death. And yet her death is not really mentioned, only her life. Vayiyu chaye Sara mea shana ve'esrim shana ve'sheva shanim shnei chaye Sara, the first pasuk. And then it doesn't say, like it says in describing, like it says by many of the avos, that they died and they expired and they were gathered to their nation. It just says where she died. V'tamasar v'kiryat arba. But it doesn't say, like it says vayigva v'yesaf al amo, none of these expressions of death. We have a number of important lessons to learn from this. Number one, remember that it says that she lived 127 years. Number one, there's an association made here with who? Esther, who ruled 127 countries. We need to find the key between that connection. Also, the Torah goes and repeats, Shnei Chaye Sara. Okay, these are the years of the life of Sarah. Again, repetitive. And then it tells us she was buried in Kiryat Arba, and then it tells us Chevron, and then it tells us Be'eretz Canaan, being very specific about these three locations. We need to analyze all these. First of all, in discussing the lack of ani that was evident in her giving Hagar, okay, and we see that, and this again is an idea from my grandfather, that her Shnei Chaye Sara, these are the years of the life of Sarah. In other words, and Rashi says they were all complete, they were all perfect. Like they're 100, like 20, 20, like 7. Her life was lived in completion. He explains that a person can live a long time, 100 years. But if you subtract the time they eat and they sleep, and then the time they're just involved with mundane acts that are really not connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and not a form of expression of the Kiddush Hashem in this world, and you subtract all of that, in the end, maybe a person lives 20 years, 30 years. What the Torah is pointing out by Sarah is every single second of her life was L'Shem Shemayim, even in so-called mundane moments. Every moment was counted. These are the years of the life of Sarah, 127 complete years dedicated l'shem shemayim. She lived for 127 years, and then she died by Kiryat Arba, which is Hebron, in Eretz Canaan. The Zohar says here Kiryat Arba, and I saw this in the Call of the Torah, which is an anthology of different ideas going pasuk by pasuk, and it's one of my favorite English Sfarim on the Chumash. It's by Rav Eli Monk. He brings down the Zohar that says the Kiryat Arba. Okay, the pshat is there were four giants, or that there were four couples in the buried in the Maris Machpelah. But the Zohar says the Kirya in the confines of the Arba, the four letters of Hashem's name. She died within the confines, which means she died as they compare her to Miriam ben Neshika with a kiss. Her neshama was taken away by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and peacefully prepared. And she died within the confines of Yud Kei Vav Kei. In addition to this, we find that Esther is connected to her. The Gra, I searched and searched until I found in the Chumash of the Gra the connection between Sarah and Esther. He says, she was the first to have Srara, domination, to be considered the Sarah of Hashem, to have sovereignty, to be considered God's princess, and Esther was the last to have Srara. Now, although Esther had Srara, which means sovereignty over Persia, are we only speaking about the fact that she was a queen over Persia and she was married to Achashverosh? It's clearly, it goes beyond that. Srara did not have a sovereignty over an empire made up of 127 countries. She had Srara over what? She had Srara over her Gashmias. She was considered alive, as we will see further, after she was death. She had Srara over death, in a sense. And she had Srara over the chate of Chava, which introduced the Ani. She was no longer faulted for having any Ani. The one episode in her life that there was a moment of that was when she left, which Hashem pointed out to her and spoke to her. To tell her this is the one slightest, an imperceptible, as we said to herself. She was considered Hashem's princess, and Esther was the last of the princesses of Hashem. And of course, you see that Esther did the same thing Sarah did. When Mordechai told her that she has to go to Achashverosh, right? Remember this part? You know what I'm going to say? What are we speaking about? Those famous words, Kasher. Avadati, avadati, which means he said, for the future of the Jewish people, you might have to be lost. You and your husband. The halacha is, if she would go to Achashverosh willingly, she would no longer ever be able to return to Mordechai, her husband. And that is the pshat, that what they explain as kasher, if I am lost. In other words, simply, if he kills me, I'm dead. But if he doesn't kill, and I accept that, I do that on behalf of Klal Yisrael, I give up myself. And secondly, if he doesn't kill me, but he allows me to come to him, and I go to him willingly, I will never be able to return to my husband. That's the halacha. If a woman willingly, in the course of a marriage, sleeps with another man, she can never go back to her husband. She gives that up too. She gives up her husband, her possession, so to speak, of her husband, that the Klal Yisrael should survive and be saved, with even if she is lost in the process. Same thing that Sarah does when she gives Hagar. She repeats the same thing, and she's considered the one who has, in Hashem's eyes, Srara. That Srara is expressed over lands, but it means, as we said, much more than that. You see that Srara has, in a sense, done tikkun on the Yeshani, but she's also, to some degree, eliminated death in a weird sense, or at least no one can truly eliminate death, but she represents only life, and not death, as the pasuk says that she lived and she lived again, and her shnei chaye sarah, they say her two lives, chaye sarah, her life in this world was connected to the life of the next world, and the pasuk tells us she died in Kiryat Arba, in the confines of Hashem's names, hi Chevron. Now Chevron, the shorish of Chevron is chibor. There's a connection between this world and the next world. Chevron, we'd say, is the opening, in Ma'aros HaMachpelah, Chazal tell us, is the opening to Gan Eden. That's where the chibor is. Between this world and the next world doesn't mean literally you can climb a ladder, but there's a chibor between this world and the next world in Chevron, which is where the great pairs are buried. And this is, by the way, the pasuk in Eshes Chayil, Zamama Sadeh V'Tikachehu. She prepared this field. We only think of Avraham buying this field. We only think of Avraham Shehara. She only thought about Avraham. We only hear about Avraham. She prepared this field. Because of her, this place had a chibur between the two worlds. And she was born in Kiryat Arba. This is Chevron. And this is in Eretz Canaan, which we won't go into right now. But just tell you one nugget. It's strange how Eretz Yisrael is often referred to as Eretz Canaan. It's very, and even later on, when the Jewish people are coming to conquer it, Canaan is the concept of hachna'a, ultimately of being machnia, of submitting, in a sense, eliminating oneself in light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will. Ultimately, that was the great challenge for the Jewish people in this land of Hachna. This land demanded Hachna'a to the will of Hashem. In any case, we move on to Rivka. In order to understand Rivka, we have to understand Yitzchak. Okay? We must understand Yitzchak or we won't get Rivka's role. The Yashav Avram. Avram came down from the Akedah, and we've mentioned these ideas before that I'm going to say right now. Where was Yitzchak? We have no idea. Okay? We don't hear about him again until the end of Chayisara. Everyone turn to page 120, Pasuk Samach Gimel 63, in chapter Chafdala 24. The next time we hear about Yitzchak is this pasuk, Vayetze Yitzchak lesuach basada lifnos erev. Yitzchak came out to daven, as we know. Chazal asked, the Medrash asked, Mei hechan yatza? Where did he come out from? And they answer, Mei gan eden yatza. Now that doesn't mean he was dead and he was in gan eden. It means figuratively. As far as Yitzchak was concerned, he wasn't here anymore. He had had accomplished the madrig of bitul, self-negation, there was no ani, there was absolutely no ani left in Yitzchak. He had given himself completely. That as far as Yitzchak's attachment to this world, he wasn't here. He was absolutely, there was nothing in this world that had any interest to him, any physical thing that could pull on him. He was in a sense dead to this world, to the whole Gashmis. He was in Gan Eden. He was completely, the ani, as we said, his ani blended with ani Hashem, and that's a very good thing. But it's not a very good thing because we're here to live, and we know that we on Yom Kippur we derive great merit because Afro Shel Yitzchak Tzabur Al HaAkeda, his ashes are on the Akeda. It doesn't mean in the Olam Hamasa. In the Olam Hamasa, he wasn't killed, but in the Olam Hamachshava, he did. He did give up his life in the world of intent, and there were ashes, so to speak, in the world of Machshava. And so he was gone. He was just ashes, so to speak. And his physical had been reduced to ashes, which is why Avram says, "Anochi afar ve'efer," okay, dust and ashes. Ashes is from the Akedah, and dust because Avram could have been reduced to dust by being murdered in the Kivshan Ha'esh, okay, and in the War of the Four Kings and the Five Kings, and you know, Klai Yisrael were compared to dust in case we're no good. So here Yitzchak was. He was, as far as this world is concerned, there was nothing left. And go on to say, it says like this, before that, I'm sorry, let's go one before that. V'yitzchak bo, he was coming from coming to Be'er L'chai Roi, v'hu yoshev be'eretz ha-negev, and he was dwelling in Eretz ha-negev. The Ishbitzer, and the Mea Shiloach explains who yoshev be'eretz ha-negev, pasuk Samach Beis, one before. The Ishbitzer explains who Yoshev be'eretz ha-negev, he was dwelling in the south. The Ishbitzer explains negev milashon minugav, minugav mikol chemda, completely wrung out, dried out from any desire for this world, any physical impulse, any normal, interest in this world. He was completely minugav, and he was coming from coming to the well. As if to say, he never really drew from the well of living waters. He was coming from coming to the well. He never really dwelled at the well, drawing from its life-giving waters. So we understand that we're talking about a person who is disconnected. He's alive in Ruchnius, but not necessarily alive in this world. Notice, by the way, I want to just point out something. It never says, Yitzchak is the only one of the Avos that never said that it says, I'm sorry, in his lifetime, Elokei Yitzchak, in his own lifetime. Otherwise, it's reserved for after death. And by the way, by Yitzchak, there's never Yitzchak Psiktama Yitzchak. It's only one Yitzchak. So in understanding Yitzchak, that he is removed from this world, now we begin to understand the role of Rivka. Okay, Rivka was clearly known for her chesed. That's obviously the primary indication of the lack of ani. Okay? There is no ani. There is no sense of what's right. Don't forget, if you think about the story at the well just for a second, if you think about it, my grandfather explains that he couldn't draw his own water, because the well was owned by the people in the town, and there was a huge rock on it exactly for this purpose, to prevent strangers from drawing water, okay, so that people shouldn't steal it. That was it was their life source. So somebody from the town had to give water and risk the anger of the whole town. The water is being wasted on a stranger. Not only that, he waited, if you look in the Pesukim, for her to draw the water. She was a young girl. Quickly, let me say something here. The famous classic idea, she was three. My grandfather Schwab explains that three is a difficult concept to accept. 3 years old, drawing water, getting married, etc. He says there are many sources in the Tosfos and in other places, and the Chazal explains she was 14. This is no contradiction to three. 3 years since she received the neshama of Sarah. We know that the Torah tells us she was born at the Akedah. And of course, Yitzchak was 37 at the Akedah. He married her at 40. So what it means that she was three is that she had had Sarah's neshama. She had been alive as Sarah. You know that famous medrash that she received Sarah at the Akedah. So she was 14, 12, 13, and 14. She was 3 years old in terms of her ruchnius life. But really, she was more of a developed person, which makes a lot more sense. And many say that she was 14. So he waits for her to lift it onto her shoulders, which is already, and begin to walk away, and then he approaches her, and he asks, can he drink from her pitcher? In other words, she doesn't know him, she doesn't know if he's contaminated, he wants to drink from her pitcher. So she gives him from her pitcher, and then she doesn't fall into the sin of amor harbev asay ma'at, that she says, oh, I'm going to give you one, I'm going to give you camels. She doesn't say anything, she waits for him to finish drinking. Then she goes and brings to the camp for the camels, and he stands there doing absolutely nothing. And he's a big, strong man with servants, and waiting to see if she'll keep giving, understanding that she has to understand, and of course it could be along the ways of how things were in those times, that he himself had no permission to bring, to go to the well, or perhaps she had no right to give him permission to go to the well, so she's watching. She has this huge amount of chesed, which clearly indicates that the ani problem is not such an issue here. But what about the tikkun for bringing death into the world? We see that it is Rivka who clearly is responsible and is given the credit for being Mechaya Mason, for really giving him back his life. She is the one who reattaches him to this world. And it's the chesed of her giving and her giving that is the rope that connects him back to this world. As the pasuk says, Vayisa Einav, he goes out, Migan Eden, right? He's not in this world. Vayisa Einav, and he lifts his eyes, Vayar, Vihine Gemalim Ba'im. Camels are coming, but Gemal is also, of course, Gomle Chasadim. What's coming to save him is the Gemilas Chesed, that will reconnect him to this world. When you give to another person, when you act with chesed in this world, Hashem created this world with chesed, and when we connect in this world to chesed, this is our chibur here. And she is Mechaya Mesim, and look at the words. Vayivieha Yitzchak ha'ohela, Pasuk Samach Zayin, he brings her to the tent. We know Rashi says, Ha'ohala, Sara Imo, he brought her into the tent and he recognized she was Sara. Sara was living. Sara was not dead. Sara was living through her because the three Nisim returned. But Ha'ohala, Chazal say, is referring to another Ohel. This Ohel became the Mishkan. It became the Ohel of Klal Yisrael, the source of life for Klal Yisrael, because the Nisim that took place in her tent were the three Nisim of the Mishkan, that the as her candles were dalek me'erev Shabbos, at Erev Shabbos so too was the menorah. As she had bracha be'isa for her mitzvah of challah, that a little bit would fulfill you, would fill a person. Same bracha on the lechem in the shulchan. And the anan kosher al ha'ohel, which came from Taras ha'mishpacha, tznias in that, that mitzvah is the same anan kosher al ha'ohel, which came from the ketoras. The mizbeach ha'ketoras. We won't go into the connections at this time. But this was the ohel of the Mishkan, the Beis Hamikdash. Sara was alive, and the next words, Vayinachem Yitzchak Acharei Imo. 40-year-old man, he was finally comforted about the death of his mother because she was living again through Rivka. So Sara, in a sense, lives and lives on. Now, Rachel and Leah, if you go through there, clearly you see the same pattern. You don't see with Rivka, you don't see an exact example of her allowing the future to go on without her. But she does say, if anything comes from it, any klala comes from this switcheroo between Yaakov and Esav, I accept the klala. I accept it. Which in a sense is not so much giving up her right to have children with Yitzchak or something like that. That wasn't the issue. But you have to have the bracha. Klal Yisrael must continue through you, and if there's a curse, I take the curse, even if that means the end of me, Klal Yisrael will continue correctly through you. However, by Rachel and Leah, it's obvious that they are repeating what Sarah did and what Esther did. Rachel gives up her possession of her husband. For who? For Leah. That Leah should be part of Klal Yisrael, should be married to Yaakov. She gives up her chelik in the shvatim because she would have meant to have all of them, so that Leah can have a chelik in the shvatim. The Klal Yisrael will have to move on. Klal Yisrael will be built, and not only through her. Clearly, this is the same mesiras nefesh, the same elimination of the ani and the future of Klal Yisrael that is can develop with or without her. Clearly, the same thing with Rachel and Leah. But I want to spend the last few moments focusing on Rus. There is an unbelievable observation my grandfather makes here regarding Rus. When Eliezer says to Avraham, he says to Avraham, maybe she won't go with me. Remember that pasuk? Ulai, perek chav dalid pasukei, ulai, perhaps she will not want to go with me. The word ulai is written mole, it has a vav. However, when he speaks to Besuel later on, repeating the whole story, he says, so I said to my master, Ulai, maybe she won't want to come with me. And it's written missing a vav. It's written as Eli. So Chazal learned from here that he was saying, maybe if the girl doesn't want to come back with me, then Eli, this opportunity will come to me because I also have a daughter, and maybe that daughter will be worthy of Yitzchak. So Eli. So now, the first question is, why didn't Eliezer have that motive originally when he said to Avraham, maybe she won't want to come back? There it's written with a vav. Ulai, maybe she won't want to come back. And the Chazal don't say a thing that he had ulterior motives. Only later on, in repeating the story to Besuel, the Chazal make a mention of the missing vav, Eli, that he did have ulterior motivation. So my grandfather says, first of all, that when he asked Avraham, maybe she won't want to come with me, he was shalem, he was the perfect eved, as he always was to Avraham, asking a pertinent, important question, what should I do if she doesn't want to come? But when he got to Besuel and to Lavan's house, and he saw they were resistant, he wanted to introduce a little suffix into their minds, you know, if you don't want to send her, maybe that's okay, because then maybe it'll come to me. You know, maybe you don't want to send her. So he said, so I said to my master, Ulai, maybe she won't want to go with me. He was giving them an opportunity to back out. And that's why Chazal say there, Eli. So Avram says here, as the Chazal comes, you are Arur, and I am Baruch. And an Arur cannot be connected to a Baruch. Now, what makes him Arur cursed, which is a very strong word? My grandfather says here, Baruch is associated with those who have eliminated the ani. If someone can eliminate the ani, my interest, they are Baruch, blessed by Hashem. However, if there is still the ani, I, and my interest, they're not blessed. And this was the indication that he still had within him a little bit of himself, the Eli. Now this word Eli, we find this word in Megillas Rus. Rus is the grandmother of David. He's the grandmother of Hillel. Remember what Hillel said? Im ein ani li mili. And we said ani is like how we write. Remember what we said on this? We'll go back to it in a minute. Wait on it. Rus. Rus is again the classic example of there is no ani. Whatever you tell me, she tells Naomi, I will do. Everything you tell me, you are my teacher. Everything you tell me, I will do. And Ruth goes ahead and tells her to do this whole thing with Boaz, to go when he's sleeping at night and all this. For what? So that there should be a future from Naomi. Boaz is 80. Ruth is a young woman. She gives her up her own agenda completely for the benefit of Naomi, ultimately leads to the Mashiach. Two strange psukim in Ruth. Perek Gimel Pasuk Hey. She says to Naomi, Batomer Eleha, she says to her, Kol Asher Tomar Eli is not written in the Tanakh, but it's spoken. But it's not written. It's Kri and not Ksiv. So the Tanakh says, Kol Asher Tomar Esa, whatever you say, I will do. When we read Megillas Rus, we say, Kol Asher Tomar Eli Esa, whatever you say to me, I will do. But Eli is not written in the Megillah because there's no Eli. There really isn't a me. It's not about me. Whatever you tell, I will do, but we need the word Eli because that's how we speak. Whatever you tell me, I will do. But the Megillah doesn't write the word Eli because vis-a-vis Rus, in her mind, there's no Eli. It's not about my need or my what will come to me. And further on, when she comes back to Naomi and she has all this barley, six piles of barley, and Naomi says, where did you get all this, right? Where did you get all this? Because at that point, Boaz, she had found favor in the eyes of the harvesters. Remember that? But Tomar, Sheish ha-Saorim ha-Ela, these six bundles of barley, Nasan li, they gave me ki amar, because they said, go, you should. And again, the word Eli there is left out. In other words, as far as it goes with Rus, there's no Eli at all. And what does Boaz say to her? Brucha at biti, you are blessed, my daughter. And what do we sing on Hanukkah? On Purim? Brucha Esther. Esther is blessed. We also say Brucha Mordechai, this is true. But we say Brucha Esther, she is blessed. Mordechai blessed. Also, he also gives her up. She gives him up and he gave her up. And Boaz says to us, Brucha At, you are blessed, my daughter. Because as far as it goes, there is no Ani. There is no Ani. Now, clearly, the Tikkun has to be on the Ani, the possessiveness of that Klal Yisrael should go on despite me, without me, which is clearly what Naomi, what Ruth does. And Boaz says to her, the chesed you did, you could have gone to a younger man and you went to an old man just for the sake of the future of Klal Yisrael. You gave up. That's clearly what Sarah did, and that's what Rachel did, and that's what Rivka did, and that's what Esther did. It's always like that. And Boaz notices it. Now, who comes from Rus, David, Meluch, Yisrael, Chai, Vikayam? The tikkun on death, on the ending of things, comes from the Ani, is that these women not only are guaranteeing that Klal Yisrael should live and live beyond them, and despite the fact that they might not be in direct connection, that it might go on without them or from another place, though they would love to be included and love to be part of it, the existence of Klal Yisrael and ultimately the final Yeshua of Klal Yisrael is a product of the sacrifice, the akedah of each and every one of these great women and her ability to remove themselves for the purpose of the future. And from this comes the Shvatim, and from this comes David HaMelech and Klal Yisrael and Mashiach. And the last, to remind you of what we said, from David comes Hillel. And remember what Hillel said, in Ein Ani Li Mili. And we said that was that so many people bend over backwards to figure out how he could say such a thing. And remember he said at the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, Im Ani Kan, Hakol Kan, and everyone doesn't know what that, how he could speak like that. And we said that the Torah Tmima points out that just like today we write like G-D, we drop a letter. What Hillel really meant to say is Im Ein Adoni, Ado, right? If Hashem is not here, if Hashem is not for me, Mili, who is for me? But Ani and Adoni, my master, but pronounced with the kamatz, are very close together. One is just missing the dalet, right? And we explained that a person who has eliminated the Ani, who is seamlessly blended with Adoni, my master, which is Avram calls Hashem Adoni first, is expressing that there really shouldn't be much space between Ani, the person, and Ani Hashem. In other words, the person should be an expression of the Ritzon Hashem. Hillel, the Gematria, 65, the Gematria of Hillel is 65, and so is the Gematria of Adoni. Im Ani Kan, Hakol Kan, which means if Hashem is here, everyone is here. Hillel is a grandson of David HaMelech, expressing the idea. Hillel expresses the idea, and of course he was the great Anav, right? Hillel expresses the idea that in the end, the Ani of the person must be indistinguishable from Ani of Hashem. That's how much the Ritzon Hashem expresses itself through the person. Clearly there'd be no Klal Yisrael without the mothers. That was their job. Okay, they made sure that there would be a Klal Yisrael. And they made sure that there would be an ultimate Mashiach, and they made sure that there would be an ultimate, ultimately the Yeshua, and they made sure that ultimately we would live, and live not just in this world, live in the next world. Which means to say, the last point quickly is just to sum up, the objective is to eliminate the Eli. The Ani, this is it's an ultimate achievement of the Mahos. Okay, everybody, have a wonderful week.